What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwire.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
We are back from Apple's WWDC, and we have thoughts, plenty of thoughts. And, I feel like it's just one of those whirlwind things. Both Sherlyn and I got back in from California yesterday after recording this. I still feel like my body doesn't know, like, where I'm in, Sherlyn, or what time zone. I don't know how you feel.
I went to the gym at 8 a.m. Eastern, so... I mean, that's my best way of getting back on the Eastern time zone. There you go.
I like how you fit in the humble brag there. Yes. Absolutely. Congrats on going to the gym, Sherlyn. Fantastic. We're also going to be talking about Summer Game Fest, folks. We weren't there for that, and I was trying to get Jess Condit on, but she's super busy still writing up stuff from that. So we have got a lot of coverage around that, and there's some stories I want to highlight that Engadget has done, and also some games that looked pretty cool. Also joining us this morning is podcast producer Ben Elman, who I'm sure has thoughts on Apple and the game stuff.
Good morning. I sure do.
Good morning. And as always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review in iTunes. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. I'm not seeing enough of those emails. I would love to answer some reader questions. You can also typically join us Thursday mornings around 10:30 a.m. Eastern, depending on the timing. Really, it's just like about scheduling. But that's about the time you can like carve out in your schedule for us. Join us. You could see us on video. Sometimes we'll demo gadgets and we'll just have like a great Q&A session too. So it's a fun time. Join us for that. I do want to point out, if you're just listening to this episode, we did do a bonus episode at Apple's campus, and it actually turned out pretty well because Sherlyn and I were like right outside the, was it the Mac Cafe or Cafe Mac? But we were outdoors, surrounded by traffic and other noise, but it actually ended up sounding pretty good, I'd say. And that was like our overall thoughts on WWDC after 2 days of going through meetings, going through the keynote and everything. In this episode, I kind of want to take like just a step back. And do you have any final thoughts, Sherlyn? Because I know you did a piece about the undersung features that you appreciated that were announced. Anything else you want to shout out?
Yeah, when we did our recording, I don't think I had taken my demo of the new satellite messaging features just
no.
yet. So
was
I wasn't
that.
Able to
yeah.
talk about it. Plus, it was under embargo, it turns out. So this morning, my article on the details of how messaging via satellite will work is on Engadget.com if you want to head on over. But yeah, there's a lot of like under the radar things. I kind of got at some of them during our recorded episode earlier this week. Maps, for example, I don't know if I mentioned, but like Maps had some really cool routes, like for hikes built in now, and you can create a custom route and then you can share them. So my whole thing is I'm going to create these custom like scavenger hunt trails, or like how do you get from the train station to my favorite restaurant in the fastest way in my mind and share them with my friends. Or like share, my goal is one day to share the preferred route with my Uber driver. Like, don't take this tunnel, take that tunnel. So that was one of them. I really like a lot of the other features that I found out after the fact. Like iOS 18 actually has some math notes embedded into the Notes app where you can write a little list of expenses from a group trip, for example, and then, you know, put an equal sign to equate them, right? The name of like... venue was $50,000, and then I don't know, food was $10,000, and then you can tally it by saying venue plus food equal, and then take that divided by like however many people.
How big of a trip were you having where you have $50,000?
I know, right?
Venue?
It was a wedding trip. This was like, I was also on Brian Tong's podcast after where I made this exact same sort of like example, uh-huh. but instead of saying trip, I said wedding. So I'm using the same numbers from wedding planning.
Okay, wedding
except
planning.
Except for
yeah.
I said it was a trip. Listen, I travel bougie, you know? I just go on boats my life.
Yeah, we do. We are well aware. But I feel like that's a feature that could be abused also to sort of like, hey kids, follow this path to my murder den.
I mean,
or something
sure,
like that. I don't
obviously
know.
Create custom paths to lure people into your ice cream van, but that's obviously then on the person to decide whether or not to follow it. It's not like telling you where to live your
sure.
life. Buddy305 Love in the chat asked if texting via satellite will be a paid service after a year. So Apple has literally no outright answer for how
it's
much
really
it's
shrug
cost.
Emoji on all the satellite services
I think
for
it's
years.
Less shrug emoji and more like kind of like not sure yet. I feel like the sense I'm getting is that they're playing their cards close to their chest. The satellite service provider for their satellite services is Globalstar. And if I had to guess, I'd look at what Globalstar charges and like maybe do some math around like the package or whatever.
But it's Apple. Like if they were to do that, it would be like discounted somehow. It'd be
right. Exactly.
Somehow.
That's what I meant. Like do the math to make it not as expensive in assuming you already have sort of a device that, I mean, again, I'm extremely extrapolating here. I'm not like, I don't have any insider info here other than I know there's no plan.
I think it's funny. It's been like 2 years since Apple announced like satellite features. First of all, it was like the emergency SOS feature, right? Like if you're stuck in the middle of nowhere, maybe you could send a short text somewhere to tell people where you are. And now it's like straight up like more messaging features.
Well, no. So emergency SOS via satellite was just for emergency responders. So you were only allowed to text, like it would be like when you're trying to dial 911, but you don't have a signal at all, then you would be redirected to a service center. So Apple had these like middle people that it was helping relay these emergency SOS messages to. Either it would figure out where your closest 911/emergency services situation is and route you there with your satellite message, or have you like have they handle it themselves, maybe if they like be the dispatcher or they get in touch for you. And it was like, only text messages. This time around, messages via satellite is different, right? You're not limited to who you can message over satellite this time. You can send it to pretty much anyone in your iMessage. iMessages are end-to-end encrypted. If you send them, you're also allowed to send SMS. The stipulation that Apple has put in place is that for SMS, only the person that's off-grid is able to initiate a message over satellite, because they want to prevent, you know, promotional business messages from clogging up the congestion, the satellite network.
That makes sense,
Yeah, it absolutely makes a lot of sense. And I think that the inclusion of SMS here is good. I mean, like, so I asked, I was like, why not RCS? And I think the idea, what I'm getting is that like RCS messages are like bigger in terms of size to like compress over satellite. Even if it's just text. So I think there's just challenges and complications there. But still, you know, like cool too.
Is it straight up just text? Like, is it the Messages app, but doing multimedia stuff too over satellite?
So it's just, or is it just correct. The text? So it's just text and then with emoji as well as emoji tap back reactions. So by the way, before this dubbed up, I did not know that those reactions are called tap back. So thank you very much, WWDC, for.
Oh, really?
Informing me. Those, you know how like when you're in a message with your friends and you like double tap their balloon.
I remember when they announced it.
React. I didn't know the name was tap back. I thought tap back was something else.
This is sad. We can't take the Android out of Sherlyn because like, that was a thing people were talking about on the Apple side. It's just funny when they talk about
the back of your phone.
No. You could apply so many like memes to Apple's approach to the satellite subscription, right? Like initially it was like, ask me in 2 years, please. I have not figured this out yet. And then last year they were like, we're going to extend it for one more year. So I don't have to think about this. Like it is the ultimate, you know, can I extend the deadline for my book report, please, professor? Like, can I, it's kind of hilarious. So now it's a whole,
I think it's interesting because it lines up with their approach to all of their Apple intelligence things where they're not charging people a fee. I think there's an unspoken yet in there. And I think Apple wants to be able to see if there's a reason to charge people before it charges people, which is not a bad idea. I think right now, satellite services on iPhone 14 and later haven't seemed, you know, enough to justify paying an additional monthly fee for, even if it's $1 a month. Like, I just don't know yet. And but with messages via satellite, I can see they're building their way there, you know?
Yeah. It's also, once you start being like, okay, we're going to start nickel and diming you for this stuff. And I do feel like Apple is one of those companies that's like, is that actually better for the customer experience? Does that actually mean people won't use it, right? Like, if somebody has to subscribe to it and then they're in an actual emergency and they can't subscribe to it on the go, is that person like, they don't know how to deal with that potential PR disaster. So now it's just like...
Optics are awful if you're suddenly just...
Optics are awful. So now it's like, okay, free for everybody, I guess. I think this is kind of related to something we were talking about, Trillin, where I really did not want Apple to do like a paid AI service. And they announced Apple Intelligence. And again, folks, go back to our bonus podcast. You can hear our main thoughts about all the major stuff. But they specifically did not do like Apple Intelligence Pro or Plus or anything. It's just like, hey, It's doing a lot of stuff that's baked into your devices, either the iPhone 15 Pro Max or the Pro, or the newer devices coming up, or, you know, M series Max as well. But it's what's on device, some Apple stuff in the cloud, which they're doing some cool privacy stuff with, and very little bits of ChatGPT, like ChatGPT when necessary. But nowhere along this point are they like, please pay us more for faster AI. That's not happening, right?
It's not seeming like it's happening. And I think that's a good thing. And I think also the integration with ChatGPT at no cost is a good idea on Apple's part. I do want to point out that CF 542 in the chat that say that if satellite texting is going to cost, they would rather pay per use instead of a monthly amount because you'd rarely use it. And yeah, that seems like maybe it will be the approach. It seems smarter to offer people that at a nominal one-time fee when needed for like something that's an emergency thing, right? Like you don't have to pay for every single use, but we'll charge you per text. That makes a little bit more sense, even if it's very 1990s.
I think that's the other thing. Like, oh, we're back to paying per text now. That's weird.
I know. But that helps to reduce or relieve the congestion, potential congestion on those networks that are so precious.
Gotcha. Well, now that we've had some time away from WWDC, Sherlyn, and our coverage and all the meetings and everything, like, do you have any thoughts about what is next for Apple for the year ahead or with their new software or anything?
I mean, I'm looking to iPhone event for surprises, I guess. I do think, again, I'm keeping an eye on the chat, and there are some things that, like, it feels so. We talked about this on the episode that we pre-recorded, but maybe for our like main audience, I want to repeat and reiterate the main takeaway. It is that, as usual, it seems like with some of these features, Apple is copying or doing things that other people have done before, right? AI. The chat is talking about the icon tints, like the customizable homepage, the RCS with support. These are things that Android has done for a while. Android has had Material U and like the tinting of the icons. But like, I gotta say, we said this the last episode, like, and Apple seems to do it a little bit better. It's more sophisticated. They took their time to do something better, and they're slow. And maybe the implementation isn't all the way there, but what they have delivered works the way they say it will, you know? And they don't make promises they don't keep, really.
I mean, typically. I think that's typically rarely. The thing.
Yeah.
One thing I want to point out, there was news yesterday that basically Bloomberg reported that Apple is not actually paying OpenAI for using ChatGPT. And also OpenAI is not paying Apple. It seems like a weird agreement where basically, OpenAI will get money down the line from like revenue sharing. I guess that's like the plan moving forward. But it is, to me, that really describes what we were talking about before, Sherlyn, where Apple has been like, okay, we have all this AI stuff, and here carved in the little island is going to be our little like AI model friend, right? Right now, our friend is ChatGPT. But if that friend breaks this relationship, right? If like they do something bad or we don't want to like deal with them anymore, you just like cut out that friend. You know, like X them out entirely, replace them with another, with Google Gemini or something. It seems very like plug and play, like what Apple can put in there. They also mentioned that they would consider Gemini. They have not made any formal deals or other models that are very specific. So like if you're a health worker, maybe there's a medical AI model that would be better suited for helping you rather than ChatGPT or something. So that is interesting.
It was nice of them. Nice. It was like smart of them to be like, oh yeah, we're supporting the best one out there who's a pioneer in the field of this open AI. And I'm like, I don't know. I'd argue with best. It is a pioneer, certainly. And I we'll see, right? And like they never mentioned, they actually in the panel after WWDC keynote, by the way, that I just seen moderated panel, Craig Federighi did mention that like Gemini or John Andrea might be the one that said this, but Gemini might even be supported in future if it gets to that
Federighi
point.
Federighi said that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so interesting, you know?
It's interesting. Also, by the way, I just want to talk about like how weird that whole situation was. So after the WWDC keynote, Apple invited press to come to this talk between Craig Federighi, their head of software engineering, and John Gianandrea, their head of AI, right? And like, oh, this is going to be interesting. This is going to be informative. But it was also moderated by iJustine. And no shade to her. I think she's great. But it did feel like this was just a scenario where Apple wrote these questions and like, hey, person who is media well-known, please ask these questions that we've asked and do not stray from any of this, right?
It's one step above when Samsung does its like their own company execs interviewing their other company executives situation where like you're paid literally by Samsung to interview Samsung people. In this case, I don't know if iJustine was paid, but it definitely feels like, you're a bit more. Right. But someone that was more controllable than, say, a member of the press. So
it's just it is interesting when companies do that. But Ben, go ahead.
So I was going to say that it was also a little bit like how Disney does all of its PR stuff. Yeah. Actually, like this is on my mind because I saw the 4 hour long.
It's four hours. The Star Wars hotel video.
Yeah. So now people are talking about, oh, well, Disney does PR kind of weirdly because it's also like really on rails. You have to say like the actual trademark name for everything. So was this similar?
To me, I actually had that in my mind too, Ben. To me, it did feel like that. It was sort of like, yes, because of course, branded content right here, blah, blah, blah. Everything we just said at the keynote. Like it definitely felt on rails. It didn't feel like a natural conversation where, you know, I feel like if one of us were to do that chat, we'd be like, yeah, but who, where are you, what are you training these models on? What's going on here? Like, give us the full skinny and everything. And yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about private cloud compute? Because that sounds like you're talking out of both sides
of
your mouth.
They did end up saying more about that. But even then, I would have liked to be more. That is funny. I wrote up like what Apple and what specifically, I think Craig Federighi laid out for the whole Apple, the private cloud compute thing too. But the really interesting there too is like Apple for years has been saying like, hey, our stuff is on device. It's more secure than Google where you're sending all your photos to the cloud for processing or whatever. And now they have to rely on the cloud a little. So they're like, okay, but is it a secure cloud? Is it a private cloud? Yes, private cloud compute. Apple did say a few things that were interesting about that, Ben, where the information being sent, first of all, it's tidbits, like the little bits of information that if you're asking Siri about something, will go there fully anonymized, like the private relay stuff that is already on iPhones and Apple services. So that's helpful. Also, the servers don't store anything, which I think I'm sure the FBI is looking at this and like, no, Apple, please, we need logs. We need data to see how people access things. And none of that is going to be on the servers, they say. Apple has historically, like, there was that whole thing, right, about them fighting against the FBI that wanted to unlock, I think it was a shooter's phone at one point, right?
Yes, I remember that. That was, like, 2015, 2016 or something.
So, and then I believe authorities got into the phone in another way, but Apple, for its part, was, like, trying hard to push back against that. So, yes, it's a bad name. It's also, like, very marketing heavy, but also, like, I don't know. They say they've laid out like the software that the servers are also using for security audit. Devices will only be able to talk to those approved servers. So it's not like somebody can like intercept your question or something. And the audit thing is something nobody else is doing for cloud security right now, at least from what I've seen. So, you know,
the way it made it seem like in the keynote, though, was that like everyone gets their own like place in the server rack, which is impossible.
That's certainly not true, but like when you talk about the cloud, right, the cloud is an amorphous thing. It could be 10 servers, it could be 20 servers, but the point is it's like this thing that can grow as needs require. I mean, that's just how we've been living with the cloud so far, but I certainly feel better about private cloud compute than I did about like Microsoft Recall, right, where researchers were immediately like, oh, you're just gonna capture everything we do on our computers, okay? You're not graying out, you're not blurring out passwords or authentication or anything. And then people realize, like, yeah, these are just a plain text database sitting in your hard drive. The other accounts on your system can access those very like easy to see security holes. I at least think like Apple has anticipated some of those on the server side, so that's something. Yeah. Any other thoughts, Sherlyn, out of WWDC?
I mean, I honestly feel like I could talk about DubDub forever, but I will say that some people in our chat seem to be like underwhelmed by it all.
I get it.
I don't know about underwhelming. I think more I was intrigued by a lot of like the little things that seem to be coming to iOS 18 and watchOS. I can't wait to try some of these features out for myself and see how my like more mainstream average Joe friends feel about AI. Like I was in the gym this morning. to repeat that. And I was asking everybody, everyone's like, how was California? Because, you know, I didn't come to the gym for a few days. And I was like, oh, yeah, I learned about this, learned about that. And like, I'm waiting to see how people feel about it. And I don't think we'll know until iOS and all the other software updates really roll out later this year. So see.
It's certainly not as exciting as last year was. Like, I went last year because there was new hardware and a whole new platform, yeah, and a whole new vision of computing for Apple. And now this is like, hey, we are just like catching up a little bit on AI. But also, I think this stuff is far more important in the long run for Apple than just the launch of Vision Pro, because Apple Intelligence covers everything. It's going to cover all their devices. It's also like a kind of like a reframing of how Siri will work, of how a lot of like their apps will work, like Notes and everything getting certain AI driven features. Like briefly, they had mentioned, oh, you could record calls on voice memos and also have those automatically transcribed. And for some people like us, that's amazing stuff. That's tremendously useful. Also, another example of Apple, like maybe putting a few apps out of business. I think Call Recorder, yeah, and some of the other ones, like, well, they may have some trouble. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
They're putting my favorite tiny app out of, yeah, business with macOS Sequoia.
Which one?
I love Magnet. And now they're going to do Windows tiling,
yeah,
like innately on the
straight
OS,
out of Windows 10, baby. Apple's got it in 2024. Amazing. Amazing. Anything else you want to shout out, Ben? Because I know you had a lot of thoughts, too, on Apple's side.
I mean, the biggest thing was that it seems like a hidden app folder is going to be a problem in a lot of people's relationships.
It's not that hard to bury an app into something right now. But yeah, that's certainly what a targeted way to like hide your Tinder, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the way that these companies are going to pitch it is the same way companies pitched private browsing when private browsing started to be a thing, which is like, if you want to look for gifts for your loved ones or something and you don't want them to know about it. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Sure, buddy. Sure. I like the app lock controls. That stuff looks cool. I don't know for...
Oh, yeah. I was thinking specifically about like you giving your phone to one of
That's
your
what
kids
it is.
And then making sure that like they can only like watch a video or play that one game inside an app.
That's super helpful, and also shows like, you know, Apple's kind of evolving its platforms for the way we actually use our devices, because you still can't do multi-users on an iPad or something, right? So you have to hand an iPad with all of your stuff on it to a kid. And that's not great. And they probably will never do multi-user. They'll be like, buy another iPad. That's how you do multi-user iPads, right? So
buy your mom an iPad.
Buy your mom. And that's how I have ended up with like 3 or 4 iPads in my house, you know? And I'm already contemplating another one just because the ones I bought, I was like, oh, we could share this. We could all use this. No, my daughter took this one. My wife took this one. This is now the baby video iPad. So, you know, it's tough.
To repeat what Michael Coley in the chat said, I am adequately whelmed. This is absolutely true. I am not overwhelmed, underwhelmed. I am whelmed by WWDC 2024. I will say though that Craig Federighi's all like his jokes and like the stunts or
the
what do you call
skydiving.
Them? Gags. Yeah, those are. Mm-hmm. I thought it was funny, and then the locked and hidden apps are a thing I have to. Like, it was going to make me feel even more, like, suspicious as a person. It's just not. It's going to, like, trigger my suspicious nature even more than usual. But
always be
I like
suspicious.
How, yeah. Oh, very. Also, like, Craig Federighi's, like, hairstyling pro app on his phone that he wants to hide, like, was just such a funny thing to do. I thought it was hilarious.
Also, the helmet that he was wearing in the skydiving scene that was literally
just
his hair.
I
didn't even notice
I mean,
that,
I love the outfits, the skydiving outfits were like...
Those are great, the jumpsuit.
They look like Apple spacesuits, almost, like astronaut suits, but with like the colors. It was beautiful. Those things were fun.
And it made so much sense that it was kind of like a hark back to like the Apple II.
Yes. Apple II, like white plus the colorful Apple, yeah.
Yep, yeah.
I almost feel like they kind of threw some shade at Google, right? They were like, oh, this was not on the live stream, but Tim Cook and Craig Federighi did get up on the stage at Apple Park and were like, hey, we're not going to have any fun. There's not going to be any stunts. It's just going to be an hour of us just like delivering.
It was very
like
sarcastic.
It was very, very sarcastic, but also literally what he was describing is what Google did. Just an hour of no fun delivering AI facts. And like, this is very boring and I don't care about all this. And also, I don't know if I can trust half of this. I will say, like, ultimately, between all the Copilot stuff Microsoft has done, between everything we've seen from OpenAI and ChatGPT and the Google Gemini stuff, I at the very least feel like, hey, we could kind of trust Apple Intelligence a little more, because it's more focused on, hey, I will do this thing within this app to make your life better, and not, I am an overall assistant to do everything for you, and I don't know what you're going to do with these AI generated images, but here they are. It feels more purposeful, maybe not as exciting as it did last year for a lot of people, but this is kind of how we will be using AI, just like how we're using it right now for like occasional transcriptions and things like that. Like, that is useful functional stuff that doesn't require stealing, I don't know, resources from artists and also killing the environment in the way that generated images can. All right, let's move on to Summer Games Fest. And, you know, while Sherlyn and I were in California doing all the Apple stuff prepping for WWDC, another whole contingent of Engadget was in L.A., prepping for Summer Game Fest and getting ready for demos and briefings and all sorts of stuff. There is no E3 this year because E3 is dead. We've talked about that. But Summer Game Fest is now sort of like the, I don't know, the sort of new E3, like the, because it's multiple streams. It's the Game Fest stream with Jeff Keighley, but also Microsoft does a thing. Sony did their thing a couple of weeks ago. We see all these like cute things. I'm going to highlight some coverage here. Have you seen Lego Horizons Adventures, Sherlyn? Do you understand what I'm talking about?
I have not seen that. I have not seen many of the Lego movies. Actually, very recently I saw the...
It's not a Lego movie thing. It's a Horizon game thing. So let's explain to what goes on here, Sherlyn. Popular games and franchises occasionally get Lego-fied. So there's Star Wars Lego. There's Harry Potter Lego. Basically, there's Marvel Lego stuff, right? This is the latest version of that stuff. So Horizon... You know, the Horizon series on PlayStation from PlayStation 4 and 5 is now Lego formed, and I think looks pretty adorable. I don't know. Ben, have you played the games? Because I feel like the Horizon games look really cool, but are really annoying to play. They feel like sub-tier AAA gaming for me, where I'm like, I understand why you look so good, but I really wish I liked playing you better. And this game just looks like more fun than the actual Horizon games.
I'm going to be real with you. I think there's a lot of stuff that is like Sony exclusive that feels like a simulation of a AAA game. I am playing Ghost of Tsushima right now, and it is fun. It's beautiful, but it's also surprisingly repetitive.
Like so every open world
like
game.
Really understand. Yeah. Yeah, I really understand where you're coming from. But like the new Zelda open world games, like Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild, didn't feel quite as repetitive as like Ghost of Tsushima.
Like Tsushima? Yeah, I think...
Is it Tsushima?
The thing, like the Zelda stuff feels more alive and immersive, right? Like things just kind of... You stumble upon into things. You're not like led from plot point to plot point. And I think the thing about Horizon is just, it plays very badly. It's kind of like slow pace. There's a lot of like bow and arrow action. Whereas at least with Ghost of Tsushima, like you get cool samurai action. It's really fast. Like the actual action is fast. But anyway, I'm not a huge fan of the Horizon games playing them, but Lego Horizon Ventures looks really cool.
And the really important thing about this being a Lego-fied version of a Sony title is that the Lego-fied versions of things are often like some of the first video games that kids play, period. So that is their introduction to, you know, Batman. Mm-hmm. That is their introduction to Indiana Jones. That's their introduction to Harry Potter.
Star Wars.
When parents, when parents think that maybe the real thing might be a little bit too advanced for them, or, you know, the idea of someone, you know, falling down dead is scarier than, you know, just Lego bricks like exploding.
They're also funnier. These games tend to be like very comedic, very tongue-in-cheek. The Star Wars stuff like actively makes fun of Star Wars at times, which I think is hilarious. I need to play through those. Like, they've done pretty much all the Star Wars movies, right? I need to play through those with my daughter.
So this is a great idea to like introduce kids to one of Sony's like big franchises.
Man, they should do Lego Last of Us.
Last
of Us is such an SNL like skit idea. Lego Last of Us would be amazing.
Lego Last of Us Part 2, where they try to Lego-fy the cycle of
what
violence.
What is the nature of revenge?
They talk about. Exactly.
That would be beautiful. Aaron Sepouris at Engadget calls Lego Horizon Adventures maybe Sony's most important game of the year. Recall that Sony said that they're not going to have any major like basically like studio titles happening this year. So this is a pretty big one for them. Some other stuff. Kunitsugami, Path of the Goddess from, I think, Capcom? From Capcom. Looks really cool, and it's like an action fantasy plus strategy game. Jessica Condit previewed it. She says it feels as luscious as it looks. This is a weird looking game because it's like it looks like a little bit like almost like Ninja Gaiden actioner, but also there's like strategy stuff happening at the same time. I have no idea what's going on here, but this thing is coming on July 19th. So that is sooner than most of the games shown off at Summer Games Fest. So yeah.
Yeah, from the screenshot, it looked kind of Souls-like a little bit. And then I watched a bit of the trailer and I was like, no, this is Bayonetta. But then also, what, like strategy? It seems like it might be interesting. And if you're interested in any of those genres, then maybe it's two great tastes that taste great together.
For sure. We're going to give all these games a Sherlyn scale. So I think the Lego Horizon game, maybe 8 out of 10 on the Sherlyn scale. Okay, this game, I would say 0 out of 10, but I've got one for you, Sherlyn.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel Rivals, which is a team shooter using all the Marvel characters. I could see you getting into that. I could see that being a 7 out of 10 on the Sherlyn scale.
Team shooter?
It is sort of like Overwatch, except it's all the, like, literally all the Marvel people. So Iron Man, Hulk. I don't know. Is Hulk blasting rays?
Vision?
I don't know how this is happening. Yeah, Vision. Also, X-Men stuff happening at the same, like, within it, from what I can see. Spider-Man's in here. Venom's in here. All the Marvel stuff in a team thing. I
would
see
say,
I
you
experience.
Know what I would play? Not a team shooter. I would play a Marvel dating sim. Let's put Iron Man with like Vision. Let's make them make out, you know?
There was,
you know, if you Marvel weren't first. Cowards, mm-hmm. that would do incredibly well. Because I was about to say something about how, like, Marvel has really infrequently had a real, like, blockbuster franchise. Mm-hmm. I mean, Spider-Man, I think, does some of the best for them. But if they were brave enough to do a dating sim where you could ship the characters.
They kind of did. They kind of did. Sherlyn, I think you need to play Marvel's Midnight Suns, which was a sort of like RPG,
okay, but
strategy
is it
RPG.
Romance?
There are romances within it. There are relationships. So you spend, it is a game where you have to fight big bad guys, but also you spend most of the time at like a dormitory just hanging out with Blade and everybody, and just like hanging out, having conversations. For me, that was always like my favorite part of like X-Men stuff too, of just people talking to each other. So everybody, go check out Marvel Midnight.
But I want to correct your scale a little bit. Uh-huh. I think like I don't know about 8 out of 10 for the Lego Horizons thing.
I see it being good for
yet.
You.
I
see. I it
need
being
it to be like extremely repetitive, like this. I think. Dude, hang on. Dude named Charlie in the chat was like Papa's Pastaperia or something. Pastaria. I don't know. It's if you put a word like a cute character like a Papa and you give me food like pasta, that's 9 out of 10 on my scale. You know,
the thing about the Lego games is that they're all very repetitive. Like it's about collecting stuff and just like very, very low difficulty things. So anyway, Marvel Rivals, Matt Smith wrote this up and he calls it like, yeah, the biggest threat to this is all the other rival team shooters like Overwatch. This thing looks cool, but I do not understand how they're balancing the various powers here. So I guess we'll see. Matt Smith also covered Assassin's Creed Shadows, which is the one set in Japan. And this one looks really cool. There's going to be a female assassin. Also, the legendary black assassin or black samurai Yasuke is featured in this one, too. This game looks bad as hell, like badass in the way that Ghost of Tsushima does. Like, I think it looks really cool. The only thing is it's Assassin's Creed, and I don't know if we can trust Ubisoft to be super original lately, at least with the Assassin's Creed games. Thoughts, Ben, Sherlyn?
So I remember years ago, I looked up an article just now. Ubisoft said in 2014 that they would never do an Assassin's Creed game set in feudal Japan. But now that Assassin's Creed is basically like releasing games, what, every year, every 2 years? So it's become kind of like a 2K franchise. We have Assassin's Creed 2K24. We're finally getting Assassin's Creed in Japan.
That's some. I mean, it was the most obvious thing in the world. Like, come on. A lot of us grew up playing Ninja Gaiden and a lot of similar games. Like, just give us open world. Give us cool swords. Like, that's what it's. We're begging you. begging Ubisoft to do it.
And that's what people were thinking about, like early on. They were saying, okay, well, what assassins do we really know about? Perhaps the ones in Japan?
Anyway, that looks cool. That looks, and that's also going to be on Apple hardware too. Apple made a point to point out to show that that's going to be running on Macs and also like iPads and stuff too. So this is another example of Apple getting like AAA games. I believe they also got the last couple Assassin's Creed. Yeah, the recent one set in the Middle East was also on Apple devices. So that's all cool stuff. We actually saw some hardware from all these announcements too. Microsoft announced.
That was cool.
I don't know if it's cool.
Cool to
it's
me very, to see like hardware out of a gaming show, I guess, you know?
It's confusing because what we ended up getting is there's a 1 terabyte all digital Xbox Series X, which is not selling very well right now, at $450. That's confusing because the MSRP for the Series X is still $500, but everybody has that thing on sale below $450. So for the longest time, you could have gotten the Series X for like $400. I think at times, occasionally I saw it's like $350 with a disk drive and everything. There's no like hardware tweak for this. They're not making this any faster. So that is really weird, especially as we're hearing about the like PlayStation 5 Pro coming out. There is a $600, 2 terabyte special edition Xbox Series X, which is baffling to me because nobody... Very few people are buying the Xbox Series X. So presenting an even more expensive one, Sherlyn, I don't understand
the calculus. I'm surprised it's more expensive. I will say I saw the headline and that's really the extent of it. I was like, oh, an all-digital Series X? Cool. I guess the Series S doesn't need to exist anymore. I don't know. And also, like, am I getting this one? Because I don't like to collect discs. I don't. But then you're saying it's more expensive than the, like, the previous Series X?
It depends. It's more expensive than the like MSRP. So this is all very confusing. And Aaron Sepouris wrote up a great piece about like, this is a little disappointing because we also saw from the whole Xbox leak stuff, and you can't always take that information like to be completely legit, but we did see design specs from Microsoft saying that they were working on a $500, 2 terabyte, all digital Xbox Series X, that was codenamed Brooklyn with faster Wi-Fi and a lot of stuff, and a new controller that had like motion sensing, like doing more stuff like the DualSense controller is doing now on PlayStation 5. That controller is nowhere to be seen. And instead, we have a more expensive Xbox Series X that people already were not wanting from Microsoft. So that is weird. Microsoft did show off like a whole bunch of cool games at their thing. Like we finally saw Perfect Dark. We saw a bit of the new Fable. It has also been years since those things were announced, and those games also aren't coming till 2025, I believe. So, again, like I don't know what a difference is going to make for Microsoft, but so confusing. When I look at Microsoft's problems, I'm like, well, just you want to sell subscriptions, man? Just make your shit cheaper. Let people buy your box, and then they will subscribe to your thing. Nobody's going to buy a $600 Xbox. Maybe the weird, like the people who have already bought Xbox Series X's may buy another one. I don't know. It's just baffling to me. So just does Microsoft not want
the market for Xbox seems soft.
It's super soft. My thinking is like Microsoft just doesn't want to lose more money on it because they're already losing a ton of money on Xbox hardware. So like if you lower the price, then you're taking a bite out of potential revenues, right? But if you raise the price, then at least like maybe you'll make that up for the loyal fans who are already supporting you, who are rebuying second consoles. I don't know. That just seemed kind of baffling to me. Another tidbit, the Xbox head, Phil Spencer, said, I think we should have a handheld. So, wonder what that means. Are they going to debut something this holiday season? Is that the thing they're really going to want people to push to rather than a box under your TV? Maybe a handheld that can be docked like a Switch or like a Steam Deck or something? Like, to me, that seemed like a logical path forward for Microsoft, especially if you want to sell Game Pass subscriptions. So, yeah. Would you buy an Xbox handheld, Trillin?
I mean, buy is handhelds. A strong word.
Mm-hmm. Would you play one,
depending on the software, I think. But I don't know. I have like an INAO that I borrowed from Sam, I believe, and it's full Windows. And after a while, it's kind of basically sitting collecting dust. So I don't know that I'm the type of person that will get like a Steam Deck or whatever. It
really I mean, the Steam Deck is so much bigger too. So yeah, okay, right. Okay. I think we
I mean,
know
I like
where
my Switch.
Stands.
I hook it up to my TV. I think maybe if the Xbox gaming handheld could be hooked up to the TV, like a lot of them can, then I would be more inclined to. Yeah.
There's no reason they couldn't. And right now, right. That's another good use of the Steam Deck, is it's sort of like a portable console that you can play handheld, but bring it on vacation, dock it to the TV if you want to, and do some like big living room gaming too. I remember you liked Arcane, right, Sterling, the series?
The TV, the show?
The League of Legends show.
Yes. Yeah.
So we saw a trailer for season two. That looks fantastic. It seems like that's going to be the only other season of Arcane. So that looks cool, at least from what we've seen so far. That show takes forever to produce because the animation is so complicated and so in-depth. But I'm looking forward to seeing that. Yeah, folks, let us know what you like from all the gaming announcements. Like, I was so focused on Apple, I only saw occasional trailers here and there, but Perfect Dark looked cool. I am playing a bit of I Am Your Beast, which is the demo. That demo's up now on Steam, and that's from the folks who did that like Max Payne clone recently, which looked, that was a cool game. I really enjoyed playing that, and I Am Your Beast is just like cool and stylish and violent in all the fun ways. So podcasts and gadget.com, let us know what you enjoyed from Summer Game Fest and all the announcements recently. Let's move on to other news. How do you think, like, what do you think, Sherlyn? Currently, as of now, I think, X is officially making likes mostly private for everybody. Do you think this will, like, hide your shame, or do you not care?
I mean, we were having a chat in the, like, afternoons, like, of the team, the afternoon shift. And I know that Pranav was, like, quite upset. He cannot no longer stalk some of the people that he would look at their likes. I think this,
that's
me,
it's helpful. Yeah.
It was helpful. I think it helped you understand what people were like in a way that their tweets or their retweets weren't going to show. For me, I personally don't care. Like, I didn't care if people saw my likes or not. Like, I'm not going around liking salacious or like embarrassing things. Yeah. But yeah, my take on this move is it's obviously protecting the people that Elon Musk wants to protect, and himself included, right? Like, what is he liking? I mean, the thing that makes me like pause is like, what if a social platform like Instagram starts doing this to like hiding your likes? Because you used to be able to like stalk people way more easily on Instagram, let's be honest. And then now it's like a bit more like of hoop jumping. And I know that, so all my experience of the internet is through the lens of Reddit, right? And Reddit, uh-huh. There's one that I follow that's like, I don't follow it, but it pops up on my homepage. It's the Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce sort of subreddit, where they're like, look at all the people he follows and look at all their posts he liked. And I'm like, wow. Like, it's not
kind of crazy. Yeah.
I don't think it's telling, really. I don't know. But like, it is some data that you're now, you know, that are now being hidden from you. So it is like free speech, but hide your shame. I don't know.
That's what it is. Like, yeah. Every time Elon is like, we believe in total free speech, but also I don't want people to see what I truly
exactly.
believe in. And the dude has been out there saying, like, I don't know, racist and misogynistic things, and honestly, anti-Semitic things at points too. So it's like, the dude has actively supported neo-Nazis on his feed. I think he just learned that likes are totally public and that people can hit a button and see everything you've liked.
Right.
And then it's just like a line of like porn and weird random stuff and weird racist stuff that he
is now getting
into. I feel
as if like he got called out or caught doing something recently. The thing is, we've all noticed that he does these things, stupid like replies and whatnot. And so, like, why is he only realizing now? I think someone that he cares about the
almost
opinion
definitely.
Of told him.
It's Cat Turd or whoever. Like, one of those people that that also are big fans of the former president. I don't know. It's a very silly thing. Also, we saw in the news this week that Elon Musk withdrew his breach of contract lawsuit against OpenAI on Tuesday. The move came a day before a California judge was supposed to, like, hear OpenAI's request for dismissal for that whole thing. That was when, like, he said OpenAI had become like a closed source de facto subsidiary of Microsoft and was basically using OpenAI to make a lot of money and to license its services. And he just pulled back on that. I wonder if the revelation about the Apple deal not being fully a thing that is making a ton of revenue could be part of that. But the other
he's just jealous. He's just jealous Grok isn't getting more money.
He's all about, he wants the Grok. He wants everybody to Grok. There was another report yesterday that OpenAI's actual revenue is reportedly booming with annualized revenue of $3.4 billion. That's a lot of money. Where is that money coming from? Because it's not just like ChatGPT Pro subscription.
Microsoft?
I mean, as revenue? As revenue? Because Microsoft owns 49%. I don't quite know. So there's a lot of like weird, shady stuff happening.
The paid subscription version of ChatGPT alone, I don't know if that's enough.
It can't be billions. Like that, yeah. It's $20 a month. And also, like, I don't know how many people are actually doing that. Anyway, what did you think of this, Sherlyn? The news that Chrome OS will soon be leaning on the same technology that powers Android. That kind of makes sense, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's interesting as to like what it implies for the future of Chrome OS. I think we've been waiting so long for this sort of like midway between Chrome and Android OS that could help Google better take on or better make better tablets or tablet software. That's really all I could really think about. I mean, I don't know that.
Right here, Google is saying you will be embracing portions of the Android stack, like the Android Linux kernel and Android frameworks, as part of the foundation of Chrome OS. So that's interesting, because before Chrome OS was like a Linux foundation plus Chrome, plus a lot of Chrome stuff, whereas Android was always like a Linux foundation, and now they're like, well, let's just kind of smush the two together a little bit, right?
It feels as if it's building out the OS a bit more, like the Android kernel, the Android framework, that sort of stuff, like in the way it handles maybe, I guess, notifications or apps, maybe. And then like with Chrome running as a very like browser-based sort of OS, like maybe it'll be on top of that Android framework even more. Here's the other thing too. Apparently this is going to take some time, but it will, according to Google, enable more AI features on Chromebooks.
Mm-hmm. Or at least like it'll make it easier to develop, because right now if they wanted to do that, they'd have to like build out the Chrome OS actual software base plus a separate stuff for Android, and now Google can kind of combine work a little more easily. That makes sense.
Yeah, and in the past, like, Chrome OS has adopted quite a few Android features already. Like, yes, like I said, more Android app support, and then also the Android Bluetooth infrastructure was also baked into Chrome OS. I can tell you exactly when, but, you know, somewhat recently. It looks like definitely they want to put more AI in Chrome OS.
I'm sure Google folks are looking at this and like, why are we managing two separate code bases for very, very similar products at times? Like, ultimately, Chrome OS could just end up being Android running like a full screen, you know, version of Chrome or something, or like a slightly, I don't even know. I don't even know why it should be a whole separate thing, except Chrome OS was a lot more secure than Android. So maybe this could open up security vulnerabilities. I don't know. We shall see. Final bit of news this week. And there's so much news this week, so we didn't get to have a chance to do everything. But I saw the news yesterday that Alamo Drafthouse is being bought by Sony Pictures. That is something.
I didn't know how to feel about this, honestly. I couldn't tell if it was a good thing net or not so great thing. I mean, we all love Alamo Drafthouse, but yeah, it's like, huh.
It's a whole thing. So in 2020, was it the Paramount decree ended? That was the thing that prevented movie studios from owning movie theaters, because that's how it used to be before the 1950s. So like studios had direct control over cinemas and the experience, and that meant they would like limit which movies could go where or like really isolate things, similar to how like some games can only be on certain consoles, like how that all stuff is controlled. So this is the first example we're seeing of that whole thing kind of going away a little bit. It's interesting because Alamo has been kind of in trouble for a while. They declared bankruptcy a couple of years ago. I know their licensees have been shutting down in several states. Like people have been also talking about like bad labor practices and something from them. This will financially help Alamo Drafthouse and help it survive longer as a brand. But I do wonder what this means. Like, how will Sony Picture Integrations make their way into this chain? Will Sony like block things from other?
That's what I was thinking.
Other folks, there's nothing stopping them from doing that because the Paramount decree is gone. So that is weird. And I do wonder if we'll see more of that too, because before the whole like Reddit stock stuff happened, like AMC was tanking for a while, Regal was tanking, and there was a thinking that in these other companies, movie studios and other companies, may just start buying up theater chains, because these are big buildings that are already built with giant screens. Like, there's a lot you could do with that infrastructure that isn't just like doing studio, you know, studio movies and stuff too. So I guess we'll see. I'm just like really, I don't know, just really hesitant to like celebrate this news at all.
I know.
Yeah. Same. Let's move on to what we're working on. Are you working on anything, Shalyn? Because I'm kind of dead right now.
I am dead, but I have like something like 4 edits on my plate today. So I gotta power through and meetings, and the work continues even if you feel dead sometimes.
The work continues. That's how it goes. I mean, we have devices that we'll be reviewing soon too. So it's an onslaught. Like things just kind of come at us, folks. But yeah, we're gonna get excited. We're gonna re-energize after WWDC and get ready for all the new devices we're expecting. Any picks for us this week, Shalyn?
I haven't been like doing any relaxing in the last few days. But today, last night when I got home, I was like, finally, I'm in my home. I feel so good at home. I really like being in my apartment that I made to order to feel good for me, right? Finally sat back and turned on like my guilty pleasure. I saw on Netflix, Perfect Match season 2 is on. So I started watching Perfect Match. It is the trashiest stuff. The stuff that like there's like TLC and ABC and all of those quality. There's like reality TV that's like there's a standard, right? And then there's Netflix reality, right? And then there's Netflix reality in terms of Perfect Match, where they basically pull people from their other reality shows like The Circle or Love is Blind or Too Hot to Handle. And then they put them together in one space, I think it's in Tulum, and then have them try to date each other. And it is absolute trash. And I am here for it. You know what I like? I like to watch people be bad or, you know, go through these like struggles of like your self-esteem and whatnot, and then psychologically tear them apart, but also compare them to people I know in real life. It is so, so somehow relaxing for me.
I mean, it's like a brain massage for you. I get it. It's just like it helps you chill out. That's totally fine. I want to shout out, I've been reading, or I guess listening to an audiobook, which is how I can define reading at this point, because often my eyes are too tired to read because I'm reading stuff all day. But during our trip to WWDC and afterwards, I have been listening to the audiobook for Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. Have you heard of this, Shalyn?
No.
This is a novel by Gabrielle Zevin. It's about two friends who bond over a love of video games and end up running a video game studio together, but it's also, you know, the novel about friendship and platonic love and romantic love, and also finding a place for yourself in the world when you feel kind of like the world is not meant for you too. I think it's really fascinating and moving. It kind of gets a little over the top at the end, but this is something people have been talking about recently because it is not like a tech-centered book, but it is something that is well aware of like the culture of video games and what it means for us and how things are built. So I think you'd enjoy this one, Shalyn. It's definitely going to become some sort of like Netflix, I don't know, series or movie. I think a movie is being planned. I know the rights were sold, but this thing is so like long and like, I wouldn't say quite epic, but it's about life. It's about a journey of life between friends, and it would be really hard to contain this in like a 90-minute or 2-hour movie even. But anyway, I'm enjoying the audiobook. I got that from Audible. But the book itself, I'm sure, would be a fun, easy breezy read. Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. If you're listening to the show, I think you'd probably dig it. So check it out. It's by Gabrielle Zevin.
That's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, wherever. Blue Sky, Mastodon, all over the place. And I talk about movies and TV at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me some examples of mind-numbing games or TV shows like Anesthetic for My Brain, send them to me on Twitter. I am at Shirlin Low over there, or on Threads at Shirlinstagram, or just email chcr@engadget.com. Email us your thoughts about the show at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe anywhere you get platforms.
Yes. Thanks, folks. We're out.
Microsoft?